A long, long time ago in a galaxy far less gentrified.
Exactly. Yeah. Welcome to Neo Bohemia. I'm Charlie Layton, and with me today is Rich Lewis.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Rich.
Glad to be here, man.
So the theme of this episode is about community, artists, communities, neighborhoods in New York City, the effects of gentrification, how does an artist interact, all types of issues revolving around the theme of a community. And when I thought of this theme, you were the first person I thought of. You've lived here all of your life. Mm-hmm. So where were you born?
I am originally from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I am from Clinton Hills, by the way of the Farragut Housing Project. So that's, I guess that would be South Brooklyn, very close to the Brooklyn Bridge. Very close to the neighborhood that would be classified as Dumbo, that would be classified as Dumbo now.
Right.
Yeah.
And which schools do you go to?
I went to an elementary school called St. Angela Hall Academy that is no longer existing. Then I went to Xavier High School in Chelsea, Fordham University for my undergrad, and I did NYU for my master's. So I did not leave.
Yeah, you've been here this whole time.
I did not leave. I stuck it out. Yeah.
First you went to Fordham.
Uh-huh.
What was your degree?
I have a dual bachelor's, goodness, in philosophy and communications. Yes. Okay.
And then NYU for social work?
NYU for my MSW, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And at the time, you were also a poet.
I was.
And the years after, during our friendship, I would see you and we would also perform together sometimes at Collective Unconscious.
Yes.
The Reverend Jen's Anti-Slam.
Absolutely.
We were both on some crazy public access.
Very crazy public access. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you... Eventually, you went back to become a social worker.
I did.
And then you were working alongside that, too.
I was working alongside that. My very first experience in the field, I was 17. I had to do a senior service project for my school. And I ended up working with the Coalition for the Homeless and volunteering at the YMHA on 92nd Street. And we would do fundraisers for homeless shelters. And the goal was to throw parties for the kids in the shelters. And it was the first time that I did needs assessments and kind of encountered the world of social justice or social inequality. And it kind of stuck. So when I got out of college and I was a man with a philosophy degree and a journalism degree who didn't want to be a lawyer... I was stuck looking for a job and ended up applying to a place called Covenant House. That's a homeless shelter for teenagers 18 to 21. And that is where I kind of cut my teeth. I got a little bit of everything. You got a little bit of mental illness, social inequality. You had the LGBTQ population, individuals who just simply had migrated to New York to fulfill a dream and were in some levels of success, that got me off to the races and I haven't looked back.
Right. And so you've dealt with many walks of life.
Many walks of life. From birth to geriatric, practically.
Have you dealt with people who were outwardly seeking to be artists?
Quite a few. I think that going through some level of struggle and being silenced for so long is a breeding ground for artists. So I think I've encountered some of the most brilliant artists I think I've ever come across in my life. Yeah, working in the field, definitely.
So what spurred you to become a social worker?
I think I've always been interested in telling people stories. And when I began to hear people's stories, I didn't want to become involved in shaping those stories. You begin to see commonalities and things that just didn't seem right and things that didn't seem fair. And I wanted to help people. So yeah, that's kind of how I got it. How I got my start. I started telling my story and telling other people's story artistically, and then I became an advocate and I told their story professionally. I run life skills and psychoeducation groups. I've kind of developed a bit of a model that uses a combination of poetry, social justice, and kind of philosophy to teach people how to overcome their barriers. So I use the clinical stuff to discuss symptoms and triggers and just like styles of coping, but I use a philosophy to teach them how to view themselves as human beings and how to view their environment. We look at symptoms as matters of perspective to be analyzed, right? We look at art or music as necessary for sensual reality testing, necessary for grounding, necessary for almost like for triggering endorphins. So literally, I teach them how to use their artists to be artists as medicine. And I teach them how to actually use the way that they express their art to form communities and to share and to give gifts and to give a validation and to provide security. So we teach them how to interpret that for mental health benefits.
And use poetry with that too?
Absolutely. We probably do poetry just like 3 times a week. Yeah.
How does that work?
What I will do, I will take topics like resiliency, and we will read poems about resiliency, and I'll ask them, take your story, take a line from a poem that jumps out, and we'll talk about a particular line and why that relates to their personal story, and then sometimes we'll come back, and since they're on the topic of resiliency and kind of bombarded with that image, well, what does it mean within your diagnosis to show resiliency? What does it mean for your diagnosis to fight back? And use someone else sharing their story, being open and emotionally vulnerable, as a way for them to be emotionally vulnerable, thus open the healing process.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's lovely. That's really nice, because you can relate to a piece of text and you can share that feeling that you have with the poem with someone else who can understand it too. Right. So that, in a way, this makes me feel like this, and you explain that to someone, and they might agree with you, and then you don't feel as alone all
Absolutely.
Of a sudden. That there's some sort of knowing sense of experience, right. Shared experience, and then, well, maybe, is 2 people enough to make a community?
Absolutely.
At least a communion.
No, I think that 2 people is enough to make a community.
So at the heart of a community, artistically, there might be a shared experience, right?
A connection. Forget shared experience.
A connection.
I am you, and you are... I am me, and you are you. We are 2 individuals who recognize each other and feel more secure simply because of that.
Yeah.
Does that recognition mean that we share something artistically? Maybe that recognition means that we push for the continuance or the furthering of our ideas. I just simply acknowledge your existence. And because of my genuine acknowledgement of your existence, we are connected. We are part of a community.
That reminds me of Brothers Karamazov. I exist. In thousands of agonies, I exist.
It's funny. I was never even much of a reader of Dostoevsky. My mom was a math person, and just that simple physics, the idea of an object in existence, and the fact that once it now takes up space, everything that also takes up space that exists at the same time has to interact with it on some level. And I think even if you're not a science person, when you explore human interaction, when you explore our world, you explore culture, you explore history, you find those interaction points.
Right.
You literally can see them within your own history. even though you may not have had a tangible understanding of when so-and-so came into existence or when the other person came into existence, you may be able to watch, this is what their world's meeting looks like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two people community. Yeah.
So earlier you asked me a question about artists, and it stuck with me. You asked, would artists still be artists if they didn't have to suffer for their art? And how much of the suffer and the struggle is deliberate on the part of the artist? How much do they do it to themselves? How much of it is the environment? And I can't speak across the board for all artists. I know that, at least in acting, drama is born out of conflict. So there has to be at least an acknowledgement of what conflict is. There would be suffering in many processes, meaning there might be the idea of suffering to train, physically train.
So suffering for the sake of identification, suffering for the sake of identifying with the other, experiencing these uncomfortable emotions for the sake of saying that I can stand in the shoes of the other person who experiences these uncomfortable emotions.
Sure. And okay. If we go to Dostoevsky, there's so much to be born out of suffering, and you gain such a perspective from struggle and suffering. But I'm not sure.
So then the argument. So if you're arguing from the perspective of Dostoevsky, that you gain a perspective from suffering, of course you would suffer for your art, because through suffering you have growth, and why wouldn't you want to grow?
Right, yeah. You would grow out of struggles. Yeah. Life, I mean, we can't be in denial that life has suffering, elements of suffering. It's some more for others, some less for others. There's something compelling about overcoming suffering and struggle, or at least working through it. And you said you've come across many people who are obviously struggling, because they come to you through the Covenant House or the other places you've worked. And they want to express that.
Absolutely.
Artistically.
Absolutely. I think you find people who are looking for innate and natural ways to find their voice. And in some cases, the artistic communities that they appeal to aren't intended to be artistic communities. They're meant to be people who listen and look at them like they're normal, or look at an individual like they are beautiful, or that they are charismatic, or any of the normal social things that we crave as human beings. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I guess, for lack of a better word, you begin to kill two birds with one stone if you're lucky, that you get to be a person who is making a living or attempting to carve a living as an artist while seeking that community that, you know, that may have gotten you started in the first place.
You mentioned the possibility that if you were an artist, you could be growing up in a community that frowns upon invention.
Absolutely.
Being inventive.
Absolutely.
And so there's this, there might be a conflict in that, because you want to break out of your community, but also you want to acknowledge it.
Absolutely. Everyone wants to feel grounded. And it's funny that as an artist and like almost like a mental health professional, you begin to realize that if that initial state of grounding, if that grounding in a home sense isn't present, it has the potential to have an effect on the rest of your life. It has the potential to have an effect on the way that you form connections. So that is the ideal, to have support from the foundation up. Yeah.
So an artist has to create almost a new community.
In many cases, I feel like they do have to create a new community if they're not fortunate enough to have a homegrown support base.
Yeah, support system, family, the neighborhood, fan base.
Yeah.
Do you recognize artist communities within New York City?
Absolutely.
Having grown up here all of your life.
I think that...
And are they physical or are they traveling?
Uh-huh. I think that now with the advances in technology and social media and the ability to turn any space into a meetup now. Almost your pop, I guess your pop-up location, for lack of a better word. I think that there isn't a artist community in the way that there was, but I think there's much more of a web of artists. There's an interlocking web of artists, not a traditional community, not a traditional gathering of individuals who, or a traditional one-stop location
for your artists. There used to be for such a long time.
There used to be.
Greenwich Village, Lower East Side, Alphabet City, Harlem before that.
Absolutely. It was Soho. As far as your galleries, I mean, to some extent, there was the Bronx for hip hop.
Exactly. And then there was Williamsburg. Still is.
There still is, but not to the same extent.
Yeah, and I guess that's been 10, 15 years now.
That has been about 10, 15.
And now Bushwick taking the place. Where do you think? Why is it? Why is it that people go to these neighborhoods?
Art is alive. And I think as our world grows, where these hot spots will bubble and pop up is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And as our society grows and social issues change, the ideas that a person needs to scream out loud or put on a page or transform someplace are going to change. The reason why you may have a different part of Brooklyn reflected as an artist community now is because that part wasn't gentrified 10 years ago and nobody was angry there.
Right.
In that particular way.
But then it gets priced out and people, Bushwick, Williamsburg especially, is now one of the most expensive places to live in the country. And artists who are not making enough money to match the rent have to move out.
So maybe you're having a reflection of art that isn't as gritty or isn't as raw as it once was, or it reflects a different voice.
Mm-hmm. The voice changes.
Absolutely. The voice changes as the population changes. The population changes as the environment changes.
So in the time that you've lived in New York, all of your life.
My God, it's changed, but it's changed so much.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the cheapest rent you ever paid?
Oh God. Well, I know that you can get an apartment in the 90s for a couple hundred bucks, and this is in Bedford Stuyvesant.
Okay.
A couple hundred dollars, and this is like the mid 90s. But easily, I guess a place now that would be about $1,500-$1,600 was $800 in the early 2000s. No one wanted to live in Bedford Stuyvesant. No one wanted to live in Red Hook.
Right.
Before the early 2000s, nobody wanted to touch Williamsburg. I think that because of that, the art that came out of the city was very, very raw. And very, very aggressive. And I think that it felt fresh for that reason, because you didn't think that this came from a polished or a manicured place.
Mm-hmm. So based on your knowledge, if you were an artist entering a pre-established community whose prevailing culture is different than your own, what's the most important thing to consider?
There are going to be times that you don't feel as though you relate. A strong sense of self is incredibly important, and that's with any artist, because you are going to encounter resistance. And I think that the more foreign that resistance is, the scarier it has a chance to be. And what is going to separate the artist who does well for themselves from the artist that is constantly, you know, that isn't making it, is that commitment to pushing forward, even though someone's going to think your stuff sucks.
Mm-hmm. And what is a respectful way to interact within this community if you're trying to get involved, if you're trying to make art specifically there?
Okay, well, I guess I can give two answers. Depending upon what your approach is, understand your population. Understand your audience. If you're able to give your audience what they want, that appears to be a pretty good formula for success. Now, how you're going to feel about yourself as a human being within that process is neither here nor there. Or you can carve out that level of comfort where you make your art on your own terms. So there is a level of, if you can only be yourself, you can only be consistent with that. Mm-hmm. So it depends upon, it's kind of a pick your poison kind of thing. Do you want to be the person who completely buys in and is on the pulse of the culture and what is necessary to be successful, and you're doing whatever that is? Or do you set a clear standard and market your behind off and stick to it until you have your following?
What are the benefits to an artist who gets involved in their community? What do you think an artist has?
Growth.
Growth?
Personally, professionally, you get to actually grow. You get to grow the culture that you are representing. Mm-hmm. You can establish your own longevity. You can build the system that sustains you for a prolonged period of time if there really is a true sense of culture, a true sense of community, and you're involved in it.
So an investment in the community also invests your own artistic perspective. You gain skill. You gain social abilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's something to bear in mind when technology, the internet, makes us more prone to just going home, staying home, getting on the computer, being only interacting artistically through social media, avoiding the people who are right next door to you.
Absolutely.
On your block, down the street. And we had, prior to this technology, we had more forums for that. We had the coffee house, we had the dive bar, we had the rock and roll club, record store club, dance club. We had community artist galleries as well.
Absolutely.
And there's something still to be said with physical human interaction and gathering the courage to pursue that.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. It's kind of funny that when you hear the way that, I guess, artists compete against each other, even when you look at social media, even if you look at professional artists and these feuds or whatever, it's just so impersonal. Mm-hmm. And it's almost as though you have these individuals who are supposed to represent some level of emotional sensitivity being incredibly emotionally insensitive. So, and I wonder how much the lack of community or the lack of a physical community.
Yeah, because, I guess technology was able to cover the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And make it a global community, a national community, an internet community, YouTube, right. Facebook. I think there are so many benefits to that because then you can find support anywhere.
Right. But you can't hug a person from a mile away.
No.
And if you are a person who puts hugs above all other things, and well, there's something going to be missing
right.
in that equation, I guess.
That's true. And some mediums require more immediate physical human interaction.
Absolutely.
Rather than transmitting your artistic expression online. Mm-hmm. I should also note the inherent contradiction of advocating physical geographical interaction on a podcast.
Go hug your friends.
Go hug your friends.
Go hug your friends.
Rich told you to. Hi, everyone. I have this wild dream about this podcast developing to the point where I could hire interns, but only if I could pay them. If for no other reason than vicariously enjoying the sight of a creative youngster being properly compensated for his or her time. Yay! With your help, I can make this an awesome reality. So please visit GoFundMe.com and donate to Neo Bohemia. That's NEO-BOHEMIA. Or just follow the link provided in this podcast. Thank you, and now back to our program.
Welcome back. We're here with Rich Lewis. Rich?
What inspired you to be a poet?
I originally wanted to be an artist, and my senior year of high school, my art teacher told me that I would be better off pursuing something that could make me money. And that absolutely crushed me. And I decided I was going to get a normal job, but I still had the artistic bug, so I just found a different way to tell stories and paint pictures. So yeah, that's what made me become a poet.
So wait, you didn't just work at the Covenant House, too?
No. After Covenant House, I worked for an agency called Partnership with Children. They go into at-risk schools, and the idea is to provide intensive counseling services as a means to provide emotional stability. Emotional stability allows children to perform better in school. So, counsel them until they're better in school, I guess. So I work for them. And currently, I work for a mental health day program in the Rockaways. So I am employed running groups.
You were working in the Rockaways since Sandy, right?
I have been working in the Rockaways since Sandy, right after Hurricane Sandy, to work on the Project Hope FEMA grant, and that got me in a wonderful school in Far Rockaway with some wonderful, wonderful children, and I think that kind of reinvigorated me, kind of. As far as the field goes. So yeah, I was there for a while and stayed in the Rockaways afterwards. I've been at my agency now for almost 3 years.
What would you say to someone who came to you at your job?
Sure.
Who was an artist? And clearly they're already dealing with some struggles and conflicts and difficulty, but that they have a need to express, but they are really struggling.
The way to overcome most obstacles is to be grounded in yourself. If you are grounded in yourself, you are confident in the tools that you possess that can carry you forward. So I would encourage that person to find a community or to make it a routine in their life to exercise their voice, to exercise their art, to tell their story. And they're going to inherently learn things about themselves. They're going to inherently grow as a human being. And that artistic growth will translate to growth that will help them combat a lot of these struggles.
What role does social justice play within a community?
I think, Depending upon the community, it is part of that community's heartbeat, be it the social justice or lack thereof. It is a discussion topic in some cases. It is the barrier in other cases. I mean, if you want to be cliche and say that, you know, that how many wonderful talents, because of circumstance, bad luck, had that talent or had that light snuffed out? And how does the communities in which individuals grow up and the way that they feel the world sees them or interacts with them shape their particular voice?
Because of injustice.
Or even because of justice.
Or privilege.
I hate to sound cliche, but if you ever listen to a country that is glorifying the nation that we live in or glorifying the land that we live in, chances are it's written by a person who feels that perspective within their personal life. That's what they experience, and that's what they're talking about.
Right.
So yeah, it could be strife or privilege.
It would seem like social justice is becoming more and more of a priority in artistic expression. And part of that is because of a sense of community, but mm-hmm. also global awareness now.
Absolutely.
Thank goodness for the internet, for right. sharing all this, so that it becomes a worldwide consciousness rather than isolated.
I think that even more recently, the bridge between consciousness and survival is kind of coming together. Am I aware of what's going on around me, and am I talking about it, versus do I have the luxury of not talking about this? Mm-hmm. Is it okay, is it responsible for me as a human being to see this in front of me and not in some way reflect or say something, you know?
Right, and you could potentially be an artist who grows up in a community that doesn't prioritize social justice just because it's not at the forefront mm-hmm. of their living.
Absolutely.
But then you can see it now. It's unavoidable. It's on the news. It's on the internet. And when you come to New York, you can see it now more than ever.
I think I would absolutely agree.
So how does an artist address social justice?
Just tell your story. Tell your story from an honest and human perspective. I think at the base of social justice are people, their needs and their feelings. And it's such a basic component of storytelling and a basic component of interaction. Even when you're depicting fantasy, it's based off of something. Speak about your world. Relate your world to the things that you want to escape. Relate your world to the things that you want to embrace, and I think that kind of really connects you. Yeah, as a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. How have you noticed that the artist community has kind of changed when it comes to an interest in social justice over the years?
As a teacher, I'd like to believe that the next generation is doing better than the previous.
Uh huh.
And I do. I do believe that. On the most pressing issues, race, wealth, sex and gender, orientation, and equality within that, they're getting smarter in ways that I didn't, at their age, I couldn't have even
right.
think about it. And maybe that's just because I only teach a specific group of kids,
mm-hmm.
and I'd love to believe that they were representative of the country, of the world, but I know that's not true. And there are still people growing up with prejudice, with a lack of perspective, with a lack of global consciousness, with a lack of social consciousness. But I think overall, it's one of the better qualities about the millennials.
Mm.
Our generation has so many criticisms, and my, older generations have so many criticisms, but I think on issues like sex, gender, race, wealth, equality, I believe that they're progressing, at least in America, definitely. I feel as though they're going in the right direction for the most part.
I think I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And that gives me hope. It gives me hope that they're going to do better even though they've been handed, presumably, a worse situation than things were before. Economically, environmentally. It's funny because I think this new generation cares more about social justice, but not as much about geographical
community.
Yeah. That's because of technology in one respect, and it's also just because of, there's environmental issues at play, but the social justice, and that's the double-edged sword of the internet and the global community.
Absolutely. What connects us also makes us comfortable with a watered-down version of connection.
Right. And that must that must be rapidly evolving artistic perspective, that you can get involved with things thousands of miles away and then at the same time forsake everything within a mile's reach.
Absolutely. You can sit in your bedroom and have a voice that reaches millions and millions of people. I wonder if that again, that takes a lot of the staying power away, because just as quickly as someone can click on your video, they can click on to the next one. Mm-hmm. Whereas it takes effort to attend a show. It takes effort to buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. And there is a very unique relationship when you physically go out and find an artist you never thought you would find.
Right. To sit still in a theater for whichever performance, to physically stand in front of a painting and notice just the texture.
Experiencing for the sake of experiencing, suffering for the sake of suffering. It almost comes back to the original analogy that we talked about. Would the artist suffer if they didn't have to? Would you enjoy the art in a physical form if you didn't have to? There's something to be said for the process.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to talk about gentrification for a moment.
Okay.
So how much of it have you seen? So much since you were born, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of native New Yorkers didn't feel that they would have to take photographs of their neighborhoods to remember them as they were, for the most part. And I don't mean just, you know, your raggedy, you know, mom and pop store that goes out of business and becomes something else. I mean things that appear to service the community well, and they were staples for years, and all of a sudden they become something else, and then that process repeats itself but far more quickly. And it's almost as though as the years go on, the turnover rate gets faster and faster till it's just almost bewildering.
Is there an upside to gentrification?
Absolutely. There is a chance of diversity, and there is the chance of an increase in quality of services, but that's a very, very delicate balancing act, because you have to have individuals who would truly benefit from the change be able to afford to remain in the areas where the change is taking place. And I think I can say, for one, you could take a neighborhood like Clinton Hills, which is where I spent about 20 years living in Brooklyn, and my uncle still does live there. And this is the neighborhood that was middle class and lower middle class African American almost exclusively. In the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, and these were hardworking individuals who kind of stuck out the bad times, maintained the homes, maintained the sense of community, and were either priced out or as individuals who undergo years and years of trauma in not so good areas and are given an option to go someplace else, were given an option and they went. So there is a wonderful neighborhood in Clinton Hills, but the individuals who, in this kind of story, you would have wished would have had the opportunity to benefit from it, are not benefiting from it. I think that's kind of gentrification everywhere, that you want the hardworking, you know, responsible, you know, multi-generational families to be the ones that really enjoy the change, but so often that is just simply not the case, because they often reflect an a demographic that is not really priced in after a certain point.
Right. I was thinking about the difference between cultural acquisition.
Right.
And maybe cultural interaction, how an artist, you know, interacting with another culture, Can they do that respectfully? Can they do it authentically and make it a part of their own expression? And what requires that without it being just acquisition?
Without it being like too, okay, so can I adopt another individual, access of another individual's culture in my natural, in my natural showcase in my own art?
Yeah.
I think this is going to be so cliche, and this is, I think, it's a bit of an older statement. You ever heard this one, the real recognizes real?
Real recognizes real.
Real recognizes, it is a dated, it's such a dated statement, but it's very, very true that if you're being genuine, that is something that is recognized and appreciated. I think you will always encounter resistance if you're showcasing something cross-culturally. I think that's almost intrinsic. Again, you have to be an artist, and this is part of being an artist, right?
For fear of being inauthentic, for fear of acquisitioning
culture. Right, but I think that you're going to have people who are going to be critical about that. The only way to overcome that is to be as true to yourself and as natural as you can. To the extent that you're not just regurgitating somebody else's culture, you are reflecting that culture's impact and influence on you as an artist and whatever that happens to look like. Mm-hmm.
Does a person's perspective from outside of a struggle matter on the struggle?
Absolutely. No one lives in a bubble. No. And I think even the most narrow or most skewed perspective is part of a greater framework and a part of a greater understanding of knowing what is out there. And if you know what's out there, you know what you're influenced by. So that absolutely matters. I think depending upon who you are in relation to the struggle, I think your role is going to change though. What role you play in relation to how that struggle is perceived and how that struggle is affected is going to change based upon your positioning within it.
This makes me wonder if an artist coming from a perspective or from a context or a place of privilege and advantage, addressing social justice and addressing a community different from his or her own, is their role active or is it interactive? Is it passive? What I mean to say is, if you're trying to address social justice and foster equality, and you're coming from outside of the struggle, is your role as active, interactive, or less active than the people who are actually in the struggle?
Mm-hmm.
Should you be making more opportunities for them? Should you be interacting with them, or should you just stay out of the way?
If you are, you know what? You should become an active member of the community. I say that to say, when you're an active member of the community, you fall into a role that is necessary and natural of you. And if the community that you happen to be in within that particular struggle, because mind you, it's not a universal struggle. We often operate in smaller groups. So it's small group struggle that's reflected over a whole group of individuals. So yeah, if in your small group, your role requires you to naturally be passive, then that is where you are. If in your small group, your role requires you to be active, that is where you are. And I think that even people who are struggling have failed to almost always realize is that a dialogue is required. Understanding or wanting to understand, why are you doing what you're doing? Mm-hmm. Why is it your approach? What do you wish to accomplish? Having that dialogue means something, because I think everybody has their perspective that they're operating from, and everybody can benefit from knowing what that is. Yeah.
And just acknowledging it, even if it's not your own,
mm-hmm.
struggle helps. And acknowledgement or learning, interaction with it helps you gain growth, helps you gain perspective.
And if nothing else, you have the opportunity of validating another human being's feelings and needs. And
very important.
And I think that when you foster that kind of a safe relationship, a person's more willing to do it for you.
Right.
Yeah, and who doesn't benefit from
that? You gain emotional depth, you gain perspective, you gain larger consciousness, all of which are very necessary for artists. You can't be emotionally shallow. You can't be one-sided in your perspective. You need all these things to have a well-rounded view to make your art full.
And yeah, and again, if nothing else, honesty. If I trust you, I can share. And however you define sharing in an instance like this, if I trust you, I can share stuff.
Rich, with the work that you do, what would be the fulfillment of your dreams and your life's work? What would that world look like?
The fulfillment of my dream and my life's work is helping people combine kind of art, philosophy, and culture to overcome their barriers, to change the way that people recognize one another, and without taking away from someone's power base or without challenging someone's sense of identity, talk about how just by simply recognizing someone and allowing them that their natural space and their natural opportunity, you can benefit yourself and benefit them at the same time.
Even if that person is different than you and represents things that you don't represent, is there a world big enough for the two of us?
Well,
the proverbial two of us.
Why wouldn't there be? I mean, I would imagine, even if you overly simplify, and I think we should. Well, isn't that, if you don't, that's kind of boring. That's literally your same thing every day dynamic. At some point, everyone can recognize that there's something uncomfortable or frustrating or annoying about that. You want a little bit of variety. And I guess you have to ask yourself, how much variety am I willing to accept? Mm-hmm. I mean, and even if it's too much, it is an opportunity to see how deep the rabbit hole goes. And sometimes you need that measure. You need to know, what am I up against? This is my small bubble, and I like it, and it's wonderful. But there are other things clearly out there. What do those things kind of look like?
Yeah. That's a trust and a social contract, I think, to believe that you have some basic human decency, some humanity that you can at least relate to with each person.
Right. And I think without getting politically extreme or going too far in that realm, I wonder if that's why we have such an exaggerated response to certain international measures as we do, because we're not in remote practice of looking at another or looking at something different. So if I can't accept a skin change, but we have the same geographic origin, possibly, we have the same education system, we benefit from the same services and have more or less the same ideals, but I can't even handle that, I'm not going to be able to handle something that's a complete culture and ideological change from mine. So yeah, it's good. It's a good foundation to build.
So you support you would support diversity within a community?
I absolutely support diversity within a community. I also support elements of cultural preservation, and again that, and I think that's almost automatic with genuine acknowledgement.
Right.
It's weird because I think that
at some point the two are at odds with each other, but.
Absolutely.
If things are going to change, how do we preserve? Maybe how do you preserve the best of it?
Acknowledgement. Open acknowledgement. If I can sit back and say, this is totally yours, I think it's wonderful and I appreciate it, that's a moment. That's me capturing and acknowledging it. But we struggle so much to do that. I think if we're willing to make the basic acknowledgement, then almost that cultural interaction is a wonderful, wonderful thing. I think if we're not, it's going to inherently have its pros and cons then.
What gets in the way of acknowledgement?
The potential of it challenging one's identity or perception. If I do, I think it's almost like a formula for so many things. Right. If I do this, what does it become?
I can't allow X to be in existence because I'm Y.
Absolutely. And having a skewed perspective of what Y is, right? Who am I that I am somehow challenged or altered by the existence of this? Mm-hmm. It has to do with our relationship with the world. It even has to do with our basic fundamental understanding of who we are as human beings and what are the things that influence us.
That's also a psychological quandary, right? Because you said one of the best things you can have is a sense of self.
Absolutely.
To know who you are. But within that actualization, you must also allow others to be who they are.
Absolutely. And know that the you that you are has the potential to grow. So even if I have an ideology, that ideology shouldn't be fixated to the point that I can't say to myself, 10 years from now, I could be a different person. That could be okay. And if 10 years from now, I could be a different person, maybe 10 years before, you were just like me. And maybe 10 years from now, I'll be just like you were at this current point in time. It's not a race that we're all running from the same starting point.
Thanks, Rich, for coming on. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me, man.
This has been Neo Bohemia. This was Rich Lewis. Thanks for listening, everybody.
As fast as your wheels would have you. Escape the bounding juggernaut, a landslide out of control. Awe-inspiring, destructive, they will be dead by end's night. Our souls will hope to cradle and grasp at what we have lost. Run so fast that there is no time to realize the inescapable. So fast that your ignorance takes over, becomes bliss, and wins the day. Run, and do not look back, for you will find you've left behind far more than you're comfortable with. And it will call out to you, screaming, raspy, begging to be taken along. Sacrifices never see themselves as necessary. Prioritizing is always cruel. Run, so that the tears stream away from your eyes instead of down your cheeks. So that the searing pain that would otherwise destroy your heart can only burn your skin. So that extreme becomes option, and worst case scenario is most probable outcome. And you lament on how fucked up the world is and to your favorite bartender on your favorite bar stool in your favorite dive bar. That you can't leave because it's safe here and the outside world kills and judges and takes the last of you. So run. To save face after having given up. To escape reality and escape yourself. To escape the grave. To reach the edge of the world if only to fall off.